Hello, everybody. Good to see everyone here today. We are going to have a very important fundamental conversation today. We've actually had it a couple times in the last month or so about in-building wireless and telecommunications. And the reason we're having multiple conversations on this topic is because without it, nothing happens. So we got all these exciting, you know, conversations like mobility and cloud and now AI. But unless the highways are in place and the cars are able to move, nothing happens, right? And there's been so much going on in the last 3 to 5 years, 5G, CBRS, private networks, and a technology that we're going to talk about today, which actually bonds cellular networks to create a Wi-Fi signal. And we actually use these folks that are on the show today in our events. And a lot of times we go into these big facilities and either the internet that's being provided to us isn't strong enough, that happened in Florida, or it's too expensive for what we're getting. And when we met Ian at Trade Show Internet, he really was an answer to many of our problems. And then, so today we're gonna be talking with Ian Framson, the sales director and founder of Trade Show Internet, and Michael Cerullo, CEO of Challenger Telecom. And Michael's gonna bring the other options, the more traditional options, into the conversation. And hopefully at the end of it, we're going to provide you a little bit more insight and information as it relates to your options as building owner, operators, service providers to bring heavy duty, good, strong broadband into every inch of your building. So with that, let's bring on our two guests. Hey guys, how are you?
How's it going, Jim?
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for being here. I mean, I think this is the second show in a month where we're talking about this topic. And Ian, I think you and I've been bugging you for a couple of years now saying, we got to get you into our community. We got to get, you know, we're using you, right? You know, because we had a need. And I said, you know, there will be times, and you in the green room, we were just talking about, you know, where somebody needs instant internet and maybe, you know, it's not the solution for the entire long time, but you've helped out us in a number of ways. And I think back to our conference in Florida where, you know, we were in dire straits for the general session. We were downloading major files. The bandwidth that we bought from the facility wasn't cutting it. Chuck walked over with one of the footballs, hooked it up, and boom, you saved the day, right? And so I want to have that conversation and then bring Mike into it to talk about all the great work he's doing in New York. But let's start with you. Give the audience a little bit of your background and a little bit about Trade Show Internet and what it does.
Sure. Well, I started this business 16 years ago, primarily to solve quality of service and pricing challenges in the event world when it comes to obtaining network connectivity. The problems that we were solving 16 years ago are largely still out there. They've evolved in different ways, but so have the solutions. So we're still solving similar problems today. Before that, I was a founder of a software and security infrastructure company, doing access control and video surveillance, creating web-based systems for buildings, which in the early 2000s was a novel technology. And I pivoted into event connectivity and telecom applications. And I've been in this role for the past 16 years. And, you know, we're excited to work with RealCom here in our third year running, helping you solve your challenges at your events. And we also work with landlords and other entities to help solve challenges either with respect to temporary or permanent networks, primarily for event venues.
So at a very high level, you provide us a box that goes and finds two or three signals from the common big carriers. And as I think you've explained to me, you bond them together to create a super signal, if you will, and then you push it out the other side in the form of Wi-Fi. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. We're sort of a value-added reseller or VAR, if you were to categorize the business. And our role is we are agnostic as far as which telecommunications ISPs we source. And we go out to the telecom world. We find all the best hardware, software, and data solutions and try to package them in ways that our customers find valuable.
And again, at a very high level, we put the box in this case, the Tampa Convention Center. We get the signals from the carriers in place. Give me an idea of the kind of Wi-Fi speeds you can push out the other end.
Sure. So with 5G, when you're in a building like the Tampa Convention Center, where they have a neutral host DAS with all carriers participating, we're bringing in solutions that connect to Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile. Those solutions either take advantage of one carrier at a time or in the bonded solution, all carriers at the same time. And we're able to achieve speeds anywhere from 10 megabits per second for a non-bonded connection up to about 100 megabits per second at any given moment. And for bonded, it's usually anywhere between maybe 40 megabits per second up to about 200 megabits per second.
That's impressive.
But those are variable speeds, which is the nature of cellular.
Exactly. But conceptually, that's a pretty darn good idea, in my opinion. All right, Michael, you've been more on the traditional getting buildings wired, physically wireless in the New York City area. Why don't you give us a little bit about your background and you know, touch upon some of the systems and the projects you've been involved with?
Sure. So I actually got my start after serving in the United States Air Force. When I came out, I was looking for a job as I was going back to school, and I got into telecommunications. So my first job was with a company called Spectratel, which is one of the major carriers, and I've worked for just about every single one of those guys. And I realized that each one of them did things incorrectly, mainly that they were not customer service based. And there was a lot of problems in the New York City area that I felt that I can help with. So we started Challenger in 2016 as a full service telecommunications provider that was specializing in hospitality and event networks. So we wind up bringing in everything. One of the things that we realized was going to be the main push moving forward was to not get stuck on one type of system to provide. So we use fiber, microwave, point to point, cellular from companies like Ian in order to bring in the best solution for the customer that we're serving at that time.
Right. Actually, when you were talking, and I was kind of playing through our experiences, you know, you're in the venue business, and Ian has got experience with this. We were in Silicon Valley in the fall, and we used Ian's technology because the hotel we were in was sharing their connection with all the rooms, right? I mean, this is we're in the middle of Silicon Valley. It was a quasi high-end facility. And so we needed a backup because we were worried if everybody was on their laptops in their rooms, we weren't going to get what we needed. Well, then it turns out that we couldn't get good cellular coverage inside the ballroom, and Chuck and Ian and a bunch of people were scrambling. I mean, both of you, just at a high level, why are there still many facilities in areas that you would think are innovative that still don't have the right kind of infrastructure to put on a tech show, if you will, like the one we do? Ian, you want to take a stab at that?
Sure. So the building materials themselves can impede wireless signal. Metal is notorious for doing that. So it really depends on when the building is built, how they've constructed the building, and whether there's been a thoughtfulness to allowing the spectrum for cellular signal to come into the building. Once you're in the building, you need to think about whether you're going to provide Wi-Fi or a DAS, which stands for Distributed Antenna System. I think I used the acronym without defining it previously. So whether it's a hotel or office building or shopping mall, what have you, there needs to be some thoughtfulness given to, you know, how well do the signals penetrate from the cell towers nearby? Yeah. If the answer is not well, then we need to augment that connectivity by providing either one or multiple ways for visitors to the building to be able to access the internet when they're inside.
I mean, we weren't in the middle of nowhere. We were literally within spitting distance of some of the biggest tech companies on the planet Earth who have meetings and bring people in from out of town, who have events like ours talking about things like AI and transforming the world. I just think we all got to continue to stand on the top of the mountain and yell and scream, you know, please, facilities, building, owner, operators, hotels, convention centers, office buildings. This is important to us and getting more important every day to the average consumer, right? Would you agree, Mike?
Yes. And to add to Ian's point, so what we see as a traditional ISP where we come in and actually build out these hotels and ballrooms and whatnot, it's not that the building does not want to do it correctly on purpose. What the problem is that a lot of the companies that are building out the Wi-Fi system for them are not really an ISP-based company. They're a low-voltage cabling company who's providing a secondary subcontractor to come in and, you know, say, okay, here's the heat map. We're going to come in here and this is, we're going to allocate the signal evenly throughout the whole space, not realizing that that ballroom might need a, you know, a 3 gigabit link coming directly into that space for, let's say, a Disney Upfront show that's going to be taking massive amounts of bandwidth, uploading it and sending it in, you know, into back to their co-location facility in Orlando or whatnot. So what we see the most of the time is not that the building didn't try to do it. It's just that the people that they actually hired to do it have done it incorrectly because it's not their cup of tea. It's not their main business.
But at the end of the day, for us, the customer, yep, putting on a tech show talking about AI, we struggled with the Wi-Fi they provided us, the circuit they provided us, and the cellular connectivity.
Yeah, right.
So we basically, people couldn't make phones, and we were struggling to get people coming in, you know, by video to our main stage. And it's just, if it was anywhere else in Silicon Valley, I'd say, okay, I get it. They haven't caught up with the tech, but I get the sense some of these operators maybe invested in this infrastructure 10, you know, 5 years ago and said, we're not going to upgrade or we're not going to bring it up to today's spec. Is that a possibility?
No, that's actually a very true statement. Most of them don't want to bring it up to spec because they don't want to put that, you know, that type of investment in. But that's where companies like mine come in, companies like Ian come in, because we'll go and we'll see, like, somebody like you goes into a venue and has a problem and we have to come in to fix and correct that problem so you have a good show. At that point, we'll approach that venue and we'll state to them, look, you know, there's a lot of holes here. We can fix those holes. We can partner with you, be your exclusive vendor, upgrade this system for free, and we'll take care of all the clients that come in. And those are the venues that have it right, because guys like Ian and myself were coming in and we're going with that multi-prong approach. We're doing fiber, microwave, point-to-point, and cellular as a tertiary backup to ensure that customers like yourself come in and have the best experience
possible. I would argue that you guys are representing the most state-of-the-art, you know, redundant, you know, well thought out concept. And unfortunately, you know, as a guy who's in a lot of buildings, malls, office buildings, event venues, lot, you know, hospitality, I don't know if they're just not wanting to. There's a couple hotels in Las Vegas that I won't mention, that, you know, you would think in the middle of that city, very innovative city, they can't deliver good broadband at a fair price. You know, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Yeah. So there are a lot of options. And we're going to talk a little bit about the difference between, you know, Wi-Fi and the upcoming 5G, the promise of 5G, 6G, whatever. And let's throw that chart up there and let these you two guys talk a little bit. Take us through the options that are available today to a building owner.
Sure. So there's really five major wireless technologies. There's one wired technology that I snuck onto my chart here as well. But as a building owner, you need to make a decision whether you're going to purchase or partner with a vendor to bring in any type of connectivity into your building. Usually the answer is allowing, you know, multiple carriers, multiple different ways. Redundancy is kind of the name of the game here. So when it comes to thinking about cellular, the first two columns here, these are vendors who build cellular network infrastructure. We're not talking about, you know, Apple and Google, you know, Android phones and things like that. We're talking about the antenna systems and the underlying carrier technology that brings cellular to either the neighborhood or into the building itself. So column one touches on cellular hardware manufacturers, from the antenna systems and the underlying systems that go into their data centers and their data rooms. So these systems are licensed, which means that the carriers purchase spectrum, costs anywhere from $20 to $50 billion here in the US to build out a nationwide 4G or 5G network. So these carriers purchase spectrum, they lease spaces on rooftops, on utility poles and so forth, and they cover typically outdoor areas, and there's some degree of light penetration into buildings. And the reason for this next category of DAS, which is distributed antenna system, is the need for augmenting that connectivity in buildings like universities, hospitals, stadiums, office buildings and so forth, where you have a high density of users and people who are looking for that mobility where they can walk into the building, continue their phone call, switch to DAS behind the scenes where they don't even notice that their phone has switched from the cell tower to the DAS in the building and maintain that phone call or that internet connection and continue working, sit down at their workstation or in their apartment or office and continue what they're doing online. So the reason for DAS is to bridge the gap between cellular outdoors and connectivity indoors while you're on your phone or on your tablet connected to your 4G or 5G carrier like Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile here in the U.S. or U.S. Cellular, which I mentioned is the fourth carrier. That's really the decision point where you have to look at how well do cellular signals from the outside of my space penetrate the building. And when I walk through a lobby, different floors, you know, we're talking generically about buildings here. Obviously, there's lots of different types of real estate. But you have to see where does the cell signal fall short and which carriers, in fact, fall short. And how do I provision systems for the visitors and the tenants in my space to ensure that their needs for connectivity are met?
Right. And I mean, on the DAS conversation, we've been dealing with that for easily 20 years. You're on the 30th story of a beautiful new building in downtown anywhere, and your phone doesn't work, right? And so we're supposed to be doing modern business, and the argument's been going on, well, who pays for the infrastructure, the carrier, you know, or the owner? And the owner says, well, you know, it's not my job to make sure your phones work. And then the carriers will go to the high profile, high dense, you know, buildings and applications, stadiums, high profile office buildings. And then a bunch of other buildings get left by the wayside. And that's where these other new technologies, the CBRE private networks and Wi-Fi come in. Mike, you want to talk to those two a little bit?
Sure. With, we see, look, what you hear in the marketplace right now is 5G is going to be replacing Wi-Fi. It's, you know, it's going at this faster speed. What you're also not hearing the other end of it is that Wi-Fi has actually been upgrading itself as well. We went from Wi-Fi 6 to Wi-Fi 7 faster than the previous jump. And by 2027, we're going to have Wi-Fi 8. So, you know, when we talk about Wi-Fi 8 or Wi-Fi 7, the basic premise is more bandwidth equals higher frequency, which equals wider channels for a shorter range. So Wi-Fi is still going to be probably one of the number one, retail options in the foreseeable future. What we do when we go into these buildings is, we try to provide, we do a heat map. We go in, we talk to the customer. First, we ask them about DAS. A lot of times they don't want to pay for DAS. Wi-Fi systems are going to be extremely cheaper than putting in a DAS system. So there's a lot of different carriers out there. Ian has a bunch of them on here, Aruba, Cisco, Ubiquiti, and there's a range of pricing that goes along with these. And you can always find the right implementation of the right network for the right cost for the building. Companies like mine are agnostic in who we utilize. So we're not pushing one specific technology by one specific provider. We're actually going in with the customer in mind because we want to make sure every person in that building has access to Wi-Fi from top to bottom.
Right.
In my opinion, I think I would always lead with the Wi-Fi over DAS and cellular models because it's more protected. You got firewalls that are involved that are protecting the traffic. It's not as easily broken into than these other types of technologies.
So I think it's safe to say, though, that we're going to see this tension between Wi-Fi and 5+G, you know, going forward, right? And so the question begs, if it was 2024, I'm a small, you know, building owner operator, and I had a limited budget, could I go just 5G and deliver, you know, good connectivity to my tenants, or do I still have to have both?
In my opinion, you have to go both. Okay. There's a good, and I'll let Ian talk to this more. There was recently during the pandemic, the Afghanistan migrants came to McGuire Air Force Base, and they had to put them on the side of the base where there was no service, and they didn't want it connecting for security reasons to base internet. So they called up Ian. Somehow they got a hold of Ian. I'll let him speak to that. And Ian provided a two-prong approach, and it was a brilliant approach that started off with cellular and eventually moved over to a microwave point-to-point system off of a typical cable modem. That was sending signal within a 2-mile radius. Hmm. But it was the way we see things going forward, the only way to do this correctly in the right way is to have a multi-prong approach. Ian, would you like to speak to what you did with Amentum at McGuire Air Force Base, what you subcontractors to help build?
Yeah, you know, we saw an opportunity to get a quick solution in play for an immediate need. And this happened to be, as Mike mentioned, the withdrawal from Afghanistan and hosting about 100,000 migrants and also the support staff to be able to maintain this group on a military base. But this type of thing happens all the time, whether you're going into a new office space that has no connectivity or you have a pop-up event in a parking lot. We see these types of last-minute needs all the time, and our approach is always recommending multiple ways out to the internet. So I don't see this tension, as you say, with respect to 5G and Wi-Fi being in competition. And I think the carriers have basically given up the competition and acknowledged that Wi-Fi offload in buildings and within, you know, even at the military base, we did it inside the tents and trailers and so forth where the staff was working. Wi-Fi offload indoors is great. It works really well. You can do your Wi-Fi calling right now. We're doing this entire, you know, RealCom live session, I think, over Wi-Fi in each of our respective homes and businesses where we're calling in from. But there's really no tension in my mind. And all of these technologies are really designed to work together. When you're outdoors or walking around, whether it's a military base or a campus, you know, what have you, you're on cellular. And as soon as you come indoors, you can achieve better coverage and potentially better speeds switching to Wi-Fi seamlessly. And especially when you're thinking about people who have multiple devices, if you're walking into a building, you know, I carry with me my tablet, my laptop, my phone, my Bluetooth earbuds, two sets of them, and a bunch of other things. And when you look at the device population that people are bringing into home and office spaces, not all of these devices have a SIM card with a data plan.
Exactly.
So as soon as you lose that SIM card, your laptop needs Wi-Fi or a hardwired connection. So I don't think there's a scenario where we're going to see every single device that people bring having 5G, you know, data.
Well, there's two other conversations that we won't have time for today, but there's the Starlink, you know, satellite conversation. And then there's the whole smart building automation conversation, which if I had all these IoT devices, access control, cameras, lights, and I wanted to connect them to a network, is it a Wi-Fi network or is it a 5G network? And could be
another type of network. Could be Bluetooth, Zigbee, could be any other types of wireless technologies. I think all these technologies are designed to work together. And I think if you take away anything from our call today, it's that licensed technologies like 4G and 5G from the carriers have a role. Private LTE, if you have a insular type of business or a municipal deployment scenario, that there's a role for that. And Wi-Fi being the great equalizer on unlicensed channels that we can all acquire, you know, cost-effective equipment and deploy networks ad hoc wherever and whenever we see fit. There's a role for each of these technologies, whether it's within an event or within a commercial building.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. I mean, and that's why we continue to have very complex conversations and debates like this at the conference. I mean, because every building's different, every building owner scenario is different, and understanding the variety of options and how you stitch them together is critical. All right, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about specifically what landlords or building owners, operator service providers should do in trying to figure out this puzzle. We'll be right back. All right. So you can see some of the sponsors we're showing here today are in this world. Halo is actually very active in Tampa. Ian, I'm not sure you're aware of that, but did a big project down on Tampa waterfront. And as it relates to the Marriott down there and Tampa Water Street. So we'll be talking about that a little bit at the conference as well. Before we get to the question about, you know, what landlords, you know, options and what can they do? I this is one of the questions I had on my list. I've traveled to places like India, Dubai, China, you know, various parts, you know, around countries around the world. And the one that freaked me out the most was India, actually, where, you know, about 8 years ago, I landed there and my cell phone actually worked better in India than in San Diego, you know, within 20 miles of Qualcomm, right? You know, and that's just more irony than anything else. Are we keeping up globally with this wireless access or, you know, hardwire access? You know, Seoul, South Korea comes to my mind as well. Do you guys pay attention to that? And can you speak to whether or not we're staying competitive?
I mean, I believe we are. I don't think they're doing anything differently than we are doing here. Actually, most of the time, they're getting contractors from the states to go out and build these networks. You mentioned Seoul, South Korea. It's, you know, I know they have a subway system where you have Wi-Fi underground. It's great signal. Right. And New York City has that too now. Even in the tunnels, when you're driving through a tunnel underwater, you're getting perfect cell coverage. So I think everybody's kind of coming to they're all coming to the same point simultaneously. And it's kind of the same players involved in these big builds. Okay. If you go to whether you go to India, whether you go to South Korea, whether you go to, you know, the United States, you're looking at companies like Cogent, like these publicly traded companies like them, Earthlink. These guys are the, you know, the impetus behind these builds. So it's I think originating in the States, and I think it's being built out to these other countries simultaneously, and in some cases they might be even the guinea pig for the newer technology before we decide to build it out here.
Yep. Yeah. Well, there are some like 5G deployment maps out there, global maps, mm-hmm. and when you look at that, there's a lot of dots now in these developing countries that, you know, in some cases are catching up to or surpassing, you know, investments in this new infrastructure. And the argument goes, well, we've had our old infrastructure for years and we have to undo that to build these new ones. They're basically starting from scratch.
Right.
I was also going to say the regulatory model in different countries and the amount of investment, amount of competition, each of these plays a role in their telecommunications deployment in the country. So in the US, for example, we have four major US cellular carriers, some would say three, but each of them must buy their own portion of spectrum. They have to work with the carrier, with the handset manufacturers to ensure that the antennas are built into their handsets to work with their spectrum. They have to license towers and rooftops to put up antennas that compete with real estate with other carriers, similar licensed contracted rooftops and towers. And there's not much sharing except when it comes down to neutral host DAS in buildings for this valuable real estate. So you have basically three or four companies all competing for the same investments, having to spend quadruple the amount of money to build out infrastructure.
There are global competitors who offer handset to tower to server, you know, one vendor. That's a lot more efficient business model.
Well, to even go further than that, so some of these companies that are operating in other parts of the world, we're not allowed to buy things from, right? So let's say where India can buy something from China, like from a company called like Huawei, we are not allowed to buy that stuff here. So that might be a cheaper investment for a different country. Unfortunately, we can't because of the, you know, regulations that are in place.
Well, I'm one of the co-founder board members of REC, the Real Estate Cyber Consortium. And that's another five episodes that we're going to have you guys back to talk about the cyber implications of our telecommunications infrastructure from handset to tower to server to, you know, to whatever. It's a big puzzle. And if we don't get it right, it could be not a good thing. Right.
Agreed.
Let's bring that slide up real quick and talk about the different ways that, you know, owners, the different business models. We only have a couple minutes. Ian, why don't you start? You know, what would you tell a business owner? And I know it depends on what size, you know, building we're talking about, but just give us, you know, if you got, you know, a minute coming down the elevator with a building owner, what do you say to them?
Yeah, you know, if you're going to bring in connectivity into your building, whether it's 5G on a DAS or neutral host DAS, or creating in-building Wi-Fi, or at least giving your tenants the opportunity, you really need to think about who's going to pay for this and what is the business model. Everything goes back to the incentives. And if you're partnering with the carriers, obviously you want the carriers to pay for it. If they're not going to pay for it, you're going to be hard pressed to, you know, come up with some sort of subsidy out of your tenant rents to cover this overhead expense. Depending on the type of building, if you have a multi-tenant office building, you might want to consider allowing multiple ISPs to bring fiber into your building and allow tenants to contract directly with those ISPs. If you're thinking about common areas like lobbies and patios and so forth that people share, you might want to provide some level of Wi-Fi as an amenity. So there's lots of different business models available, from owner operated to hybrid to sponsorship. Companies like Challenger Telecom have a managed service provider model. Trade Show Internet also has that, where we partner with and make an investment in the infrastructure in exchange for the ability to operate it year round and charge groups market rates when they come in to use the building to access the infrastructure. So there's so many different options out there available from a business model standpoint, as far as who's going to pay for this infrastructure and how is it recouped.
Same elevator, Mike, you got a minute. You know, you got the owner of the building coming down with you. What do you say?
Sure. In this day and age, security is the biggest concern most of you building owners have. And a lot of that has to do with access control and security cameras. And the best way for those to operate at full capacity is to have the proper internet connection that they run off of. The only way to do that is to have a primary, secondary, tertiary with battery backups in each one of your locations to ensure that these security systems that you have in place that protect not only your investment, but your customers within the investment are working and operable 100% of the time. The only way to do that is to do what the multi-pronged approach, where there's no competition in between each infrastructure, but all infrastructures are put together harmoniously to ensure a proper experience for you and your tenants.
I mean, we've realized this for years because we follow it, but you know, telecommunications is now equally as important as water in a building. Yes. And there've been people who've been calling this the fourth utility for a long time that, you know, but it is amazing that, you know, especially with a mid-sized owner operator, you know, they know it, but they don't necessarily have somebody dedicated to it. They don't have a budget allocated to do what you just described. And, it's just, they're going to find that when somebody comes to lease and their cell phone doesn't work, or there's not a good plan for, you know, a Wi-Fi infrastructure, they're going to find another building.
Yep. Agreed.
Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. I love talking to smart people, not just smart intellectually, but ones who are on the street dealing with these issues firsthand. Both of you are doing that. Ian, you are doing that for us in Tampa. As in the last few years, you've been helping us. Michael, I'd love to see you at the conference. I think you'd find a bunch of folks that are kindred spirits. A lot of your New York clients will be there, and hopefully we see you there as well. So
Thank you, Jim.
Okay. Guys, have a great day. Be well.
You too.
All right, let's bring on Mr. Berger, get to one of my favorite parts of RealCom Live, which is the news. We scour looking for the top stories. This wireless topic just won't go away, Howard.
Oh, no. That was a fascinating discussion.
Yeah.
You know, and watching how wireless has evolved over the years, I had no idea why, you know, Wi-Fi 8 is going to be out and in just a couple of years.
Well, it has to stay. Wi-Fi has to stay relevant, right? I mean, you know, 5G, 6G, whatever we're going to be talking about. I mean, CBRS, private networks. I mean, there's other options floating at the edges, you know, and someday, you know, they're going to be head to head, I think.
Well, I'm glad these guys made a strong case for Wi-Fi too, because I've always been a believer. You know, a lot of folks diss Wi-Fi, you know, in favor of, you know, of DAS. Yep. But I always thought it's a viable option that needs a little bit more attention.
All right. Well, let me get out of your way and you can do the news, and I'll be back in a few.
Thanks, Jim. And thank you, Ian, Michael. Really great having you with us today. And I'm really looking forward to having you with us at the conference in June. So moving on to the news, here's a couple of stories from Thursday morning's weekly briefing. So first, National Coalition launches turnkey building decarbonization program in 9 major U.S. cities and counties. So building decarbonization in a box, aka BDAB, is a turnkey building decarbonization program. It's being launched in 9 major cities and counties, and it's aiming to rapidly scale up deployment of clean energy technologies across millions of small and medium-sized commercial and multifamily buildings. So 6 cities: Atlanta, Fort Collins, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Reno, and San Antonio, along with 3 counties, LA County, St. Louis County, and Missouri, Montgomery County, and Maryland. They're going to be the first to take advantage of this local government-driven BDAB program. So these buildings happen to consume about 44% of the overall energy used in buildings. They're often located in underserved communities, and they've been largely overlooked by decarbonization efforts. So with the recent award of a $20 billion federal Green Bank grant, this program is going to accelerate the implementation of clean energy technologies across about 6 million small commercial and multifamily buildings nationwide, whose carbon footprint still remains stubbornly high. Next, on a somewhat positive note, according to VTS's fifth annual Global Landlord Report, which was released last week, there's a slow but steady recovery for the office market. Now, let's unpack this a little bit. So VTS reported that landlords have focused more on retaining tenants through improved tenant experience than leasing vacant space. What's interesting is that 82% of landlords reported seeing the length of office leases renewals either increasing or holding steady. So the question, what are landlords investing in? So they're investing in tenant experience technologies like outdoor communal areas, property operations, food and beverage concepts, fitness centers, and but not surprisingly, property management software is also ranking as one of the top tech investments for landlords. Next, I want to shout out to this week's technology partner, PredictAP, for their article on incorporating AI into your talent retention strategy. So despite common concerns, AI is not replacing jobs, but is adding to the workplace experience, offering better efficiency and job satisfaction. Here's the takeaway. Workers, especially emerging Gen Zs, aren't so much afraid of automation as they are of boredom and burnout. And the article argues that AI can actually improve employee experience and retention. So younger workers, they want business technology to match their consumer experience. And Gen AI is bringing it in spades. Although it lacks human judgment, it still needs human prompts to get good output, and it needs human oversight to validate the output and avoid mistakes. So in conclusion, AI can be a valuable tool for retaining employees if it's used strategically. So thank you, PredictAP, for another great thought piece. Finally, from Holly Dutton at PropModo, for sustainable buildings, architects need a better post-occupancy data strategy. So the real estate industry is kind of redefining excellence with standards like Passive House and LEED Platinum and the Living Building Challenge. And they're all good. They set stricter carbon emission rules and ESG goals, but they also set new benchmarks in building performance. But as we all know, much of the value of these certifications really starts to erode after the ribbon cutting. But architects now are starting to realize that it's important to collect data to ensure that the buildings continue to perform as they as certified post-occupancy. And in a number of architectural firms, they're starting to use machine learning to analyze and predict performance, applying these learnings to improve future project design. It makes sense that architects should study post-construction performance of their own designs. And it's a welcome trend. And I think it should accelerate smarter and more efficient, sustainable developments. So that was fast today. Those are just a few of today's highlighted articles. And I wish everyone a great weekend. Back to you, Jim.
All right. So, the National Coalition launches Turnkey Building Carbonization Building Decarbonization Program. Conceptually, I love it. But given the fact that I've got a little more gray hair than I used to, I'm a little leery on these big programs. We've been screaming buildings use 44% energy for at least 15 years. Yeah. Hopefully somebody from this organization is at RealCom and specifically IBCon, where we talk about using technology to help decarbonize. I think we're going to have a few surprises, new technologies at the conference that not a lot of people have seen that can help them in their goals. So I'm going to keep my fingers crossed, but I'm a little hesitant to think that one of these big massive programs is going to have some big results. So,
I mean, it's the, especially for the small, medium sized businesses, that one of the big problems, everyone wants to decarbonize, and increase buildings performance, but it costs money. And yeah. These guys, a lot of these folks are struggling.
But I can't tell you,
how do we pay for it? Yeah.
RealCom was founded on a fundamental principle 26 years ago that if we just turn off the lights when we're not using the building, that's a step, right? And that technology has been around forever, right? So I think at some point we have to start calling bluffs and we have to start uncomplicating these things. And I'm not joking, turn the lights off when nobody's in the building. That's the first start, right?
Good first step.
And then all the way to the big topics that we're going to be talking about at the conference, you want to decarbonize a building, you are not going to do it without low voltage. You are just not. And so all these theories are great. But again, I'm at a point in my life where I think we're going to start calling out some of this stuff and saying, look, there's real options right in front of your nose. let's start deploying some of these ideas and seeing how far they can take us.
Well, it's getting a lot of attention now. It's going to get a lot more attention at the conference.
Yep. So we'll see. I'm going to remain skeptical, and I'm going to use my cattle prod to hold these folks to these big aspirational goals. So,
yeah.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right. So before we wrap and talk about next week, let's hear from our final sponsor, and I'll be right back. All right. Well, first of all, thank you to our great guests. Great conversation on wireless. Thank you to our sponsors. And of course, thank you to the RealCom team who helps put this together each week. So this is a time of year, a little bit over two months out to our conference in June, and where we start bringing in some of the key players, talking about what we're going to be talking about. Obviously we won't be able to get full in on the topics. We've been working with these folks for months, developing the concepts, the ideas, the topics that are rising. Obviously AI is right up there. Getting teams and technology groups updated in their skills is a big topic. Integrated enterprises, smart buildings, low voltage. I mean, the list of really hot topics this year is pretty overwhelming. So next week, we're going to have the RealCom Advisory Council with us, Helene Stein, SVP and CIO of Brixmore, Sundar Papu, SVP, Head of Technology Strategy for Inland Real Estate, and Sohail Portashemi, SVP Business Technology from Brookfield. So we've got a good mix. We really chose our co-chairs carefully this year to give us a good mix of large companies, different asset types, and these three so far are leaning in. We're having a lot of great conversations. So by the time we get to the conference in June, we're going to have these top big topics identified and ready for a very, very interesting discussion. So with that, I say thank you and have a great day, great weekend, and we'll see you next week on RealCom Live. Be well.